Chapter 8 of Canto 7. The full title is Lord Nisimhadev Slays the King of the Demons. Should I put this a little closer? Okay. Text 1. Narada Muni continued. All the sons of the demons appreciated the transcendental instructions of Prahlad Maharaj and took them very seriously. They rejected the materialist instructions given by their teachers, Shunda and Amarka. When Shunda and Amarka, the sons of Shukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness, because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king of the demons and described the situation as it was. When Hiranyakashipu understood the entire situation, he was extremely angry, so much so that his body trembled. Then he finally decided to kill his son Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was by nature very cruel, and feeling insulted, he began hissing like a snake, trampled upon by someone's foot. His son Prahlad was peaceful, mild, and gentle. His senses were under control, and he stood before Hiranyakashipu with folded hands. According to Prahlad's age and behavior, he was not to be chastised. Yet with staring, crooked eyes, Hiranyakashipu rebuked him with the following harsh words. Hiranyakashipu said, "O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of my family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yomaraj. My son Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers. By whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you?" Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the supreme controller and time factor, is the power of the senses, the power of the mind, the power of the body, and the vital force of the senses. His influence is unlimited. He is the best of all living entities, the controller of the three modes of material nature. By his own power, he creates this cosmic manifestation, maintains it, and annihilates it also." Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equal poise toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and the misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone as on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly. In former times, there are many fools like you who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, 'I have conquered all enemies in all 10 directions.' But if a person is victorious over the six enemies and is equipoised toward all living entities, for him there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance." Hiranyakashipu replied, "You rascal! You are trying to minimize my value, as if you were better than me at controlling the senses. This is overintelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands, for this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those who are about to die. O most unfortunate Prahlad, You have always described as supreme being, a supreme being other than me, a supreme being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, and who is all-pervading. But where is he? If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar? Because you are speaking so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipful God come to protect you. I want to see it. Being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakashipu, who was very great in bodily strength, thus chastised his exalted son, devotee son, Prahlad, with harsh words. Cursing him again and again, Hiranyakashipu took up his sword, got up from his royal throne, and with great anger struck his fist against the column. Then from within the pillar came a fearful sound, which appeared to crack the coverings of the universe. Oh, my dear Yudhishthir, this sound reached even the abodes of the demigods, like Lord Brahma. And when the demigods heard it, they thought, oh, now our planets are being destroyed. While showing his extraordinary prowess, Hiranyakashipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful tumultuous sound which had never been heard before. Upon hearing the sound, the other leaders of the demons were afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial. In other words, can I move back? We can move this. In other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never seen before. That form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? Hiranyakashipu studied the form of the Lord, trying to decide who the form of Nrsingadev standing before him was. The Lord's form was extremely fearsome because of his angry eyes, which resembled molten gold. His shining mane, which expanded the dimensions of his fearful face, his deadly teeth, and his razor-sharp tongue, which moved about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless, and his nostrils and gaping mouth appeared like the caves of mountains. His jaws parted fearfully, and his entire body touched the sky. His neck was very short and thick, his chest broad, his waist thin, and the hairs on his body as white as the rays of the moon. His arms, which resembled flanks of soldiers, spread in all directions as he killed the demons, rogues, and atheists with his conch shell, disc, club, lotus, and other natural weapons. Bang someone on the head with it. Hiranyakashipu murmured to himself, Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, has made this plan to kill me. But what is the use of such an attempt? Who can fight with me? Thinking like this, and taking up his club, Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord like an elephant. Just as a small insect falls forcibly into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible. When Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord, who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly during creation, he entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrsimhadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrsimhadev, however, captured the great demon, along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. O Yudhishthir, O great son of Bharata, when Lord Nrsimhadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods, who had lost their abodes and were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon, did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. When Hiranyakashipu was freed from the hands of Nrsimhadev, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. Therefore, after taking a little rest from the fight, he took up his sword and shield and again attacked the Lord with great force. Making a loud, shrill cry, sound of laughter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, who was extremely strong and powerful, captured Hiranyakashipu, who was protecting himself with his sword and shield, leaving no gaps open. With the speed of a hawk, Hiranyakashipu moved, sometimes in the sky and sometimes on the earth, his eyes closed because of fear of Nrsimhadev's laughter. As a snake captures a mouse, or Garuda captures a very venomous snake, Lord Nrsimhadev captured Hiranyakashipu, who could not be pierced even by the thunderbolt of King Indra. As Hiranyakashipu moved his limbs here, there, and all about, very much afflicted at being captured, Lord Nrsimhadev placed the demon on his lap, supporting him with his thighs, and in the doorway of the assembly hall, the Lord very easily tore the demon to pieces with the nails of his hand. Where? Lord Nrsimhadev's mouth and mane were sprinkled with drops of blood, and his fierce eyes, full of anger, were impossible to look at. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, Nrsimhadev, decorated with a garland of intestines, taken from Hiranyakashipu's abdomen, resembled a lion that had just killed an elephant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had many, many arms, first uprooted Hiranyakashipu's heart, and then threw him aside and turned toward the demon's soldiers. These soldiers had come in thousands to fight with him with raised weapons and were very faithful followers of Hiranyakashipu. But Lord Nrsimhadev killed all of them merely with the ends of his nails. The hair on Nrsimhadev's head shook the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky, and his breathing agitated the seas and the oceans. Because of his roaring, all the elephants in the world began to cry in fear. Airplanes were thrown into outer space, and the upper planetary system by the hair of Nrsimhadev's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, and all the hills and mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in their material illumination, manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance. Lord Nrsimha, being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Hiranyakashipu had been exactly like a fever of meningitis in the head of the three worlds. Then, when the wives of the demigods and the heavenly planets saw that the great demon had been killed by the personal hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their faces blossomed in great joy. The wives of the demigods again and again showered flowers from heaven upon Lord Nrsimhadev like rain. At that time, the airplanes of the demigods, who desired to see the activities of the Supreme Lord Narayan, crowded the sky. The demigods began beating drums and kettle drums, and upon hearing them, the angelic women began to dance, while the chiefs of the Gandharvas sang sweetly. My dear Yudhishthir, the demigods then approached the Lord. They were headed by Lord Brahma, King Indra, and Lord Shiva, and included great saintly persons in the residence of Pitraloka, Siddhaloka, Vidyadharaloka, and the planet of the snakes. The Manus approached, and so did the chiefs of various other planets. The angelic dancers approached, as did the Gandharvas, the Charanas, the Yakshas, the inhabitants of Kinaraloka, the Vaitalas, and the inhabitants of Kimpurushaloka, and the personal servants of Vishnu like Sunanda and Kumuda. One minute. All of them came near the Lord, who glowed with intense light. They individually offered their obeisances and prayers, their hands folded at their heads. Comment?
If all of the Kimpurusha, I mean everybody from Kimpurusha Loka came, that means Hanuman came.
Right. Okay. I don't know if he was born yet. Anyway, we worship Lord Nrsimha because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipped him. That's why we worship Jagannath also. So Lord Nrsimha, at least his picture is on our altars. A few places we must. I don't think Prabhupada ever established a deity of Lord Nrsimha. That was done in Europe. But I don't think Prabhupada was involved in that directly. That was later on. Anyway, we do worship Lord Nrsimhadev. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every day when he was living in Puri, would come to visit Jagannath twice a day, and he would always go up the same stairs on the side and pass a small shrine of Lord Nrsimhadev that was in the wall, and he would recite that famous prayer. What is it? Namaste Nrsimhaya. From the, I think, Brahma Purana. He would recite that song. So we recite it. That's our song. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath every day listen to the Gita Govinda. And the Gita Govinda begins with the Dashavatara Stotra of Jayadev. We know best this one verse, Tavakara Kamalavare, but it's part of that stotra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented Lord Nrsimhadev as protector of the devotees. He appeared as Lord Nrsimha to threaten the Chankazi not to abuse the devotees. Lord Chaitanya will appear as, when the devotees are threatened, Lord Chaitanya will appear as Lord Nrsimhadev to protect them. So, our custom, it goes back to the Gaudiya Math, is to chant the Nrsimha prayers at the end of Arti in the temple for the protection of the movement, for the protection of our spiritual master and the devotees in general. Prahlad showed that he didn't have to do, a devotee does not have to do anything to protect himself. He certainly wasn't interested in making money. He had to have a bank balance to protect him. He wasn't interested in learning politics so he can have an army in a country of obedient citizens to protect him. He wasn't interested in any of that. Even when his life was directly threatened by his own father, he did nothing to protect himself. He was confident. Krishna Rakshasiti Vishwaso. He was confident that Krishna would protect him. So why can't we be confident like that? Because our faith is not as strong as his. But this is the ideal. To trust that Krishna will maintain and protect us against all odds, and therefore we don't have to waste the little time and energy we have in this life on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And the defending is also a waste of time. These other things should be minimized. We shouldn't do them any more than necessary, including defending. sometimes a devotee has to take steps to defend. Especially he has to defend other devotees. He has to defend his spiritual master and his spiritual master's honor, and the honor of the movement and the devotees. And sometimes the bodies, the physical bodies of the devotees. So a devotee may have to act to defend. But even that should be no more than necessary. And when we need defense, first aid, is to call on the help of Lord Nisimhadev. Okay, so any questions or comments, or any additional things?
Sometimes we see that Brahmas and sages also decide to intervene with improper rulership, like Venu. But yes. Sometimes they reject because, you know, they say it's not their duty just to... I mean, like here, nobody wanted, or I don't know.
I don't think they could.
I mean, even sages, I'm speaking
about... Yeah, I think everybody except for the three major demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, Vipama, Shiva, and Vishnu, nobody else had any capacity to counteract Hiranyakashipu. Brahma gave him the benedictions. So Hiranyakashipu is his disciple. So what can he do? Well, Shiva is not his pastime, so he doesn't get involved. And only Vishnu can take care of it. All the other demigods, all the other sages are powerless. Narada Muni has to sit, come and sing for the entertainment and glorification of Hiranyakashipu. So if Narada has to become the slave of Hiranyakashipu, what to speak of other sages? So in this case, it's not that they didn't want to. They couldn't do anything. Other cases, when the case of Venu, there was a very unusual case. I mean, it was the Lunar Dynasty. It was such an important thing. And if his father was such a great king, Anga, and then this was also leading up to the appearance of Prithu Maharaj. And if they hadn't killed Anga, then Prithu would not have been churned out of his arms. So it was a special situation. More normally, the Brahmins don't interfere. They give their advice. Vidura gave his advice to the Kurus over and over again. But when the advice is refused, that's it. They just walk away. Brahmins, not the Brahmins. They're not really Brahmins anymore if they get directly involved in politics. Taking sides. Everything is under the control of the Supreme. So why get involved in politics? Especially preachers. You make friends with one group of politicians. What if they get kicked out by another group? Then you become the enemy of the new group. Devotees get into trouble, sometimes dangerous trouble, because of that. They make friends with politicians. And politicians, the political hands change, the power changes sides, and then they're in trouble, the devotees. So that's one practical reason why not to get involved in politics or with politicians. Speak to them, preach to them, but don't depend on them. You don't make friends, and you also don't make enemies. We're not there to defeat. Let the politicians fight with one another. We're not there to fight with them.
Politics.
Yeah. Well, it's what people do.
Does Bhagavatam mention where this passing took place on this planet, on the Earth, or somewhere?
Well, I mean, apparently, the way it's described, that Hiranyakashipu is in the court of Indra. He's taken over the court of Indra. Right?
Yeah, but in the Gemara, I discovered, remember, somewhere in the south.
But then devotees claim, there's some supposed statement from Prabhupada that, in folio maybe, that Nisimhadev did not appear on the earth. Yeah, these places were not the original places.
Did appear? Did not.
But
like
I don't know if that's in folio. Maybe I did see it in folio.
What is the Hobalam?
Well, these are places where, these are various places of Lord Nisimha's pastimes. But they're replicas. The way if we take this statement from Prabhupada as authorized, as a real statement, then, I don't know where it is. Then we have to see these places on the earth as just replicas. The original pastimes didn't occur there.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah,
well, yeah, I mean, that's there also. I suppose the appeared in Namjeep also. I don't know. You know, I can't even remember where that statement from Prabhupada comes from, is anyway.
And when Bhagavatam says that the children of the demons, and then, does it mean that the, I would say, external form of those beings were like a demons, or just a mentality, or
no, they were.
I mean, the shape of the creatures were like a bit demonic. I mean,
I don't know if they had horns on their heads. I don't know.
Yeah.
The demons don't always appear like that, you know. With the
horns,
they're more like crowns.
Yeah, yeah.
Like crowns,
so, you know, big teeth, you know, big canine teeth sticking out. I don't know. You know, demons don't have to appear like that externally. Yeah, I mean, there's no pictures of him like that, looking
and
like.
And neither are there no pictures of the
any
of what do you call of any of the boys who are standing with
them. Well, they're pictures, but they look like ordinary boys,
mm-hmm.
You know, royal boys. Anyway, they're the sons of the courtiers who were attending, serving Renikachipu in his court. They also went to the same school that Prahlad went to.
Sandana
Marka
school.
Yeah.
Teaching honey sweeter than honey.
Prabhupada taught that.
No, he taught honey sweeter than money, not money.
No. Oh. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we stop here. Thank you all. Glory Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Lord Srinivasimha Dev Ki Jai.